MacCast, Wednesday, March 30th, 2005. The MacCast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If you're looking for a podcast related to technology, you'll find it at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for the MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geek. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. All right, so there's the fallout from this DVForge virus challenge statement made by the CEO of DVForge, Jack Campbell. We talked a little bit about it on the last show. He had thrown out a challenge to hackers and virus writers to write a virus for Mac OS X, and he was going to put up a prize of $25,000 to anybody who could do it. He was basically going to set up two machines in Tennessee, I believe, where his company is, about 30 miles apart. And he was saying if anybody could put a virus on one machine and have it replicate itself to the other machine and prove it by supplying a code bit that could be verified on both machines, he would award a prize of $25,000. He was doing this because Symantec issued a statement warning Mac users that OS X is vulnerable and it's only a matter of time before a Mac OS X virus shows up. Obviously, Symantec has a vested interest in us being worried about viruses and buying their virus products. You have to question that a little bit. But so Jack was going to put his money where his mouth is, and he got a bunch of negative fallout from it. And I guess in the end, decided for legal reasons, basically, it's my assumption, his lawyers probably told him, hey, it's probably not a good idea to pay to have a virus written because, you know, there could be some liabilities. According to a recent statement, he's saying it has to do with possible violations of federal laws. But anyway, he got a lot of negative fallout for it, and a lot of people are rumoring or saying it was a big PR stunt to gain exposure for his company. He issued a new letter in the last couple days. It's available on his website. I have a link from the show notes that I think you all may want to read before you pass judgment on why Jack was doing this. He explains a lot of things in the letter, I think, that make a lot of sense. Basically, what it boils down to is that virus companies have been warning Mac users for the past 4 years that viruses are coming to OS X. And so far to date, there is not a single OS X in the wild virus or exploit that's out there. There have been holes that have been identified, but no one has actually written a virus to take advantage of any of those, and Apple's done a fairly good job of patching those holes as quickly as possible. In his letter, if you read it, it's very interesting. He basically cites that there's probably only like a dozen or so people in the entire world that even have the knowledge to pull off something like this. And so his challenge was being thrown out there to kind of throw down the gauntlet to these virus companies to tell them, hey, stop bashing Mac OS X and, prove it. Put your money where your mouth is. Let's see it. If this is so possible, where are the viruses? And, so his point was, even though it might speed up the writing of a Mac virus if one of these dozen or so people could actually pull it off, if what Symantec is saying is true, we're supposed to be having viruses sometime in the near future. So he would only speed up the process by offering this prize. And, you know, to his end, he doesn't even think it's doable. And he's willing to pony up and step up and put up the money. Read the letter and tell me what you think. Provide your feedback at maccast.com or send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. And let's start a little discussion on this or thread. After reading it, I feel a little bit better about, I was, like many people, angry at first that this statement was thrown out there or this challenge was thrown out there, because I was like, hey, you're inviting someone to write viruses for the Macintosh? I don't want that. Nobody wants that. But, to his point, if that happened, then we could go to Apple and have them fix the problem. But on the flip side of it, he's saying, stop scaring potential PC switchers, stop scaring Mac users, needlessly. If it really can be done, let's see it be done. If not, shut up and stop making this blanket statement that viruses are coming for the Mac. So, I do firmly believe that no operating system is totally immune, but the point here is that OS X is a lot safer than the PC, and we think we have the evidence to prove it, and so does Jack. So that's what that was all about. And kind of related to this today, a story came out from Gartner DataQuest. The vice president over there, Martin Reynolds, issued another warning to Mac-centric businesses saying that, hey, you guys are going to, you know, have spyware coming pretty soon. And this is exactly what Jack over at DV4 just talking about. These companies are throwing out these blanket statements, and, you know, to date, none of it has actually come true. So they're basically kind of, you know, generating a state of fear in the Mac community that's, you know, unwarranted. Let's wait until these viruses and spyware show up and then worry about it and deal with it. And Martin Reynolds, the guy from Gartner, even goes so as far as to point out in his own statement that the Mac is harder to target, much harder to target than PCs, and that designing and implementing such a hack as a spyware on a Macintosh is going to be very hard to orchestrate. So even though he throws this, you know, inflammatory statement out there, he doesn't even truly believe that it's very easy to do or that it's necessarily going to happen. So, you know, why they're throwing out these warnings, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, is that enough virus fear-mongering for tonight? I think so. Okay, next we have a story from HP. It looks like HP is sort of renewing their interest in the iPod. They've had the HP iPod out for a while, and it was basically just a repackaged 20-gigabyte iPod. But it sounds like we're going to be seeing some new stuff from HP in the arena of the iPod, starting out first with they're claiming to soon be offering a branded iPod, and there's some speculation that maybe that'll be an iPod Photo. So more what I was originally thinking when the HP iPod came out, where the iPod would actually have an HP look and feel, but still be an iPod. So supposedly that's supposed to be coming. The other thing is they showed off a new Media Center PC, and they're going to be adding a similar feature to their Pavilion models, which is an area on top for the iPod dock. It's not an actual built-in dock from what I'm reading, but it's actually just a little molded plastic area where you can drop in the dock that comes with your iPod, and it'll help it blend cosmetically into their PC solutions. So it sounds like HP's still on board with their iPod support, and we'll be continuing to have iPod products coming from HP for a while. Okay, on to OS X news. On Tuesday, there were new builds released for 10.3.9 and 10.4. And if you remember, in a previous MacCast, I had mentioned that the last builds that were out were rumored to possibly be some of the final builds that we would be seeing. And these new builds, what's kind of positive about them in terms of release dates is that there were no major updates, no major changes in this release compared to the previous release. And the pre-release tag was actually removed from the 10.4 release. So I also saw some other websites rumoring to say that the 10.4 is the final candidate release. So we'll just have to wait and see. Another thing that's pointing to the fact that there's going to be a Tiger announcement very soon is apparently there's new Tiger documentation put up on Apple's website. So it's coming, you guys. It's going to happen very soon. The rumor is the big announcement on April 1st, and hopefully it's no April Fool's joke. We'll just have to wait and see just a couple more days here. So just hang in there. I'm really pumped about Tiger. I can hardly wait to get my hands on it and run it through its paces and test it out. And I certainly will share my findings with you as soon as I have it. So some big news today on the rumor front. If you're living in Australia, something Australian users have been waiting for a long time. I actually got an email from one of my listeners on Australia asking about this specific thing. There is a rumor from unconfirmed sources on appletalk.co.au, which is an Australian Apple website, saying that Apple iTunes Store should be available in Australia sometime this month or in the next month. So just hang in there a little bit longer, Australia. Hopefully by the end of April, you'll be purchasing iTunes Music through the iTunes Music Store. I hope you get it, because the iTunes Music Store is an absolutely fabulous way to purchase music. I think it's one of the easiest ways to get music online and download it straight into your iPod. I use it all the time. I absolutely love it. You can go to shop.music.com MacCast.com if you want to see some of the recent albums I've purchased and buy through there, and you will support the MacCast as well. So check that out. So I think we talked a little bit before about the dangers of being an iPod owner in New York, and another news story cropped up today that further kind of emphasizes the point. So if you're a New York listener, you might want to perk up and take a listen to this. Apparently, iPod thefts on the subway are increased, and a lot of people are having their iPods actually snatched. What's happening is people grab the iPod and jump off the train right before the doors close and get away with your iPod. So you probably want to make sure you keep your iPod in an interior pocket, and also probably dump the white earbuds that Apple gives you, because that's a dead giveaway that you have an iPod on you. And I think actually this, you know, I've thought about this personally myself as I'm walking around with my iPod, maybe on a clip or in a case just attached to my hip, that, you know, maybe it should really be in an inside pocket or someplace more secure where someone can't just snatch it and run off with it. You know, I always keep close tabs on my laptop as well. When it's like in my laptop bag, I never set it down where it's not within reach of me, and where I wear it on my shoulder, I tend to try and make sure that, you know, it's completely over my head and it can't just be grabbed and ran off with, because, you know, those are expensive things. The iPod is not a cheap device, and, you know, it obviously has a lure to, you know, some seedy people. So just be careful out there with your iPods. You know, use different headphones that look like they're generic headphones, and probably keep your iPod, you know, in your pocket where it can't really be seen and can't be easily grabbed and ran off with. So just a friendly service announcement from the MacCast. Okay, finally tonight in the news, a big rumor from Apple Insider. AppleInsider.com is reporting that new consumer Macs are on their way. That would include new iMac G5s, new iBook G4s, and new eMacs. And the rumor is on the iMac G5 that we're going to be seeing some faster processors, a 1.8 GHz and 2.0 GHz model, possibly improved super drives, and more standard memory. The big unconfirmed rumor, and the one that, you know, wouldn't put a lot of stock in, is that there's going to be an iMac HD high definition. What's supporting this is the fact that at Macworld, the last Macworld, Steve Jobs came out and said this was going to be the year of high definition for Apple. So a lot of people are speculating that a 22 or 23 inch HD display iMac is going to be coming out. I find it highly unlikely, because if you think just from a cost perspective, that would be a very expensive iMac, probably in the range of about $2,500, and I just don't see that fitting into Apple's product mix. Not too many consumers are going to be spending $2,500 on a computer, and if they are, then they're more likely a power user and going to want a G5 tower. Anyway, and on the iBook front, again, faster processors, a 1.33 GHz in the 12-inch model, and possibly 1.5 GHz processor on the 14-inch model. They're also going to be adding an improved ATI Radeon mobility chip for better graphics. And then the last unconfirmed kind of rumor on the iBooks is that they'll add the new scrolling trackpad, which they just added to the PowerBooks, but have had some issues with. So, you know, who knows? It's probably likely they're going to add that same technology, but hopefully they will have some of the bugs worked out by then. And all these models are being rumored to be coming out in the next month or so. So finally, the eMac, there wasn't a lot of details there. They just mentioned a faster processor and improved graphics and possibly maybe a reduced price point. There's some rumors that they might redesign the case, because I guess that's supposedly one of the enclosure is one of the highest costs for Apple. So maybe they'd be looking for a little lower cost enclosure. Who knows? We'll just wait and see on that. With regards to all Mac models, just not the consumer level models, they did this on the PowerBooks. This is just my opinion. I think Apple really needs to increase the standard memory on all Macs across the board to 512 megabytes. It just makes sense with the way operating systems and programs and things like that, the requirements these days pretty much require that you have 512 megabytes in any Mac model. 256 really, if you're selling, if Apple is selling that, people are going to be disappointed when they first get their machines and end up upgrading anyway. And with the prices of memory so cheap, I think Apple just needs to step up and make everything 512 megabytes. Let me know if you agree or disagree with me, MacCast@gmail.com. All right, next up, we haven't had a review on the MacCast in a while, and thanks to a listener, Greg, I have a review for you guys tonight. Reviews are something that, you know, I really want to include. Part of the problem is I don't have access to everything. You know, I just have the few products that I use, my iBook, my iPod. I've talked about them quite a bit on the show. So if you have a piece of Mac hardware or software, something that you'd really like to review, please feel free to put it up into an audio comment. Send it to me as an MP3 file to my email. All I ask is that you keep the reviews as short as possible. Somewhere between 2 and 4 minutes is really good. This one Greg just sent me on the Elgato iHome, it runs about 4 minutes and 48 seconds. And just so you know, the iHome from Elgato is a little box that you hook up to your television, you hook up to your Ethernet, and it allows you to access all of your iLife content on your Macintosh from your television. So you can view iPhoto slideshows, look through your iPhotos, play your iTunes, and even play movies directly off of your Macintosh onto your television with its device. It will work wirelessly if you hook it up to an Airport Express base station, and it costs $199 US. So with that, take it away. Here's Greg's review of the Elgato iHome.
Well, hello, Mac Geeks. My name is Greg. I'm from Brantford, Connecticut, and I'm going to review Elgato's iHome. Presently, I have 2 iHome units installed in my house, one upstairs and one downstairs, both using Cat 5 cable to run them to the Ethernet ports. I have 2 computers online now. One is a PowerBook G4, and the other is a dual 1 gig G4 in the other room. The PowerBook is hooked up by a wireless card, and we're going to start out by using that, and use the remote control to select the computer that I wish to use for iHome. The first thing that's going to come up is a selection of items that I could use or play on movies. For this particular iHome, I don't have a lot installed. I have a couple here. I'm going to click on Animal House, which I've encoded in AVI. It takes about 3 or 4 seconds to start. You can hear that in the background. You have the ability to go fast forward and backwards. I pause that, and I'm going to stop the main menu here. And from the next selection, we're going to go into Musics. From my iTunes library, I have a number of different songs. This one here, B.B. King at the Apollo. I just push one button, and it'll start to play all of the music that I've had in that particular session.
The King of the Blues, B.B. King!
That works very well. I go back to my home again, and I'll go into the Pictures, which gives me access to all of my iPhoto library, and in this particular case here I have quite a few, even though this is a smaller unit than I had before. And I'm going to just go into one particular thing here. I don't know if I have a soundtrack on the slideshow on this or not, but we'll give it a try. This was a New York City Century bike tour. Whoops, get that volume down a little bit. The photos will play in order. You cannot completely control the speed at which they play, but they normally average out to a reasonable speed, and you can use your pause, up and down arrows to go backward and forward. The one area that I haven't used here has been the ITV system, and I'm going to log back out because that requires me to go into the other computer where I have a number of shows in ITV. I've just logged out, and I'm logging back into the other computer. This one takes a little bit of time because I have close to 100 ITV shows, over 100 movies. I have 15,000 songs in the music library and 5,600 photos in the picture library. Now I'm just going to click on one of the shows that I have stored here, and that's going to be, let's see, Great Performances, Eric Clapton. This was on PBS. Great show.
Crossroads Guitar Festival.
I can't recommend that highly enough. I would say overall that the iHome unit is the one way to totally integrate all of your media and be able to utilize it at any point in your home. I have not tried using a wireless Ethernet hookup, but I do have the laptop, which is set up on wireless and is right now transmitting to the my other computer, which acts as the iHome base unit. One or two things to keep in mind: if you are going to use DVDs, you might want to re-encode them as AVI files with MP3 audio, so you don't have to get a digital out. When iHome plays VOB files or DVDs, the VOB file uses the Dolby Digital system, and you must have an optical output and an optical audio amplifier to do that. Right now, I've just purchased a pair of Eterol speakers. They're powered speakers with about 10 watts each, and they do have an optical in. But most of the time, the optical in is great when you want that Dolby surround, and that plays the DVDs absolutely fantastic. Well, I'm sorry if I went on here. I would say I have to give the iHome about a 4.5 out of 5 stars, and as far as I can tell you, it's been absolutely wonderful because it brings up all of my movies, all of my photos, all of the sounds from my music library, just about everything I want, and we have it where we want it, which is on the TVs where we can use it. Adam, thank you again for letting me bring this.
All right. Thanks, Greg. So there you have it. Review of iHome from Elgato. Elgato also makes the iTV, which Greg alluded to. The iTV, just for anybody who doesn't know, is a personal video recorder device. You can hook it to your Macintosh, hook your cable to it, and then record your television shows directly to your Macintosh. So it works sort of like a TiVo, but rather than using a built-in hard drive, it uses the hard drive in your Mac to record television programs. And then the iHome unit will actually let you transmit those recordings back to your television for easy viewing. So there are some really great products. You can find them all along with more information at elgato.com. Okay, next, I received some emails from a couple people, and I want to throw this out. I need to know from anybody who is using PlayPod to pick up this podcast if you've had any trouble getting recent updates. I've had a couple people who have said that they have not received updates of the MacCast since 3/23 show, and I'm not really sure why. The only recommendation I really have for them was to unsubscribe and resubscribe to the feed. The feed file is at feeds.feedburner.com/maccast for if anybody needs it. And then another thing that came up is some people out there still might have old bookmarks bookmarked to the Blogspot or the Blogger account, maccast.blogspot.com. The site has moved. The new site URL is just maccast.com. So if you have an old bookmark, please update it. I just took down the Blogger page today and put a note on there to anybody to update their bookmarks. So if you're seeing the old Blogger page, that's not the correct website for the MacCast. We have a new website that's actually hosted by me, and I'm using WordPress, and I'm getting a lot of great feedback on that. So thanks to everybody who's written in to give me good comments about the new website. I think it's working a lot better. I have a lot more flexibility in what I can do with it, so it's working out a lot better for me. Blogger was great because it was free and easy to do, and at the time I didn't really have the money to put together, but thanks to generous donations from a number of people and my new website for getting affiliate program through Amazon.com, I am able to put together my own website. So please update your bookmarks and visit the new site. And if you are using PlayPod, please let me know if you had any issues picking up the MacCast through its regular feed. So on the last show, we talked a little bit about Cody, and Cody was a high school student. He's trying to get an iBook, and he was really wanting to use Apple's educational discount, and I had said that that was something that was available for K through 12 students, and I think I even directed you all through the show notes to Apple's education website. Well, I had another high school student, Kayla, who contacted me to tell me that I was actually mistaken, and I apologize for that. So I have a correction tonight on the educational discount. High school students apparently don't qualify for the discount, only college students. And, you know, I think this is just horrible. I confirmed it through the education website. Teachers and administrators and PTA board members and all those people can get the educational discount, but the students themselves don't qualify. So I think this is just a bad policy on Apple's part, and I think that every high school student, or K through 12 student for that matter, should be eligible for this discount. And so I encourage you to contact Apple and complain. I have the phone number for the Apple Store of Education, the for individuals phone number. I'm not sure, 100% sure this is positively where you would complain, but I would imagine you could call them and find out where you could submit an email. I couldn't find an email anywhere on the education site, so this number is all I have. It's 1-800-780-5009. Call them up and tell them that Apple really needs to extend this program to the students, because those are the ones who are going to directly benefit from the machines. And not to mention, if we can get these students using Macintoshes and falling in love with a Macintosh while they're in high school, they're going to continue to be Mac supporters all the way through college and hopefully through the rest of their careers. And maybe we can make some inroads into business when we have a bunch of Mac users entering the work community. So I would highly support that, and I think that we need to take some action to get this discount available to high school students. Okay, finally tonight I got a little audio question from Alex. Alex was having an issue with doing recording of an interview on his Macintosh.
Hey Adam, this is Alex from the MASHcast. I just had a question for you. First, I'd like to say I'm a fan of the show. I listen to it all the time. Good job on the show, man. But I have a question for you. The other day I was at my buddy's house and we were trying to have an audio chat, but his power, his G5 would not accept just a standard plug mic. So I was wondering about this, and I plugged it into my PowerBook and my PowerBook would not recognize it either. So I was wondering, and I actually did some research and it says that the Macintosh just won't accept a standard thing because it's not amplified and he's an amplified source. So what I was wondering is, is there a way, is there a patch, is there software, is there, you know, drivers that will fool the Mac into wondering, into thinking that it has plugged in instead of having to go out and buy a USB cable? Because all we really want to do is have audio chats, but, you know, we don't want to go and spend $30 for a USB mic, and that's Canadian, just so you guys know. So, you know, I was just wondering if there was a way around this other than having to go out and buy, you know, the iMic just to have these plugins. So if you or any of your fans out there know, that would be much help. And thank you. I'm a fan of the show. Keep it up. Ciao.
Okay, so I didn't have the answer for Alex immediately, and I threw this question out to my audio guru, who it turns out to be is Craig Patchett, who does the Behind the Scenes podcast. It's bts.godcast.org is the website to pick up that podcast, and it's all about podcasting and equipment and what equipment to use and what are the best mics to use and stuff like that. But anyway, Craig responded back real quickly and explained to me that the jacks, the mic, what you might think is a mic jack on a new G5 or a PowerBook, is actually a line-in jack, and they do not have the preamps necessary to support microphone in without some sort of amplification. So there really is no software hack, or there's no way to do this in software. About the only way to do it is to pick up a mixer and an iMic, or there's a new product from DVForge. So you can pick up a really cheap mixer, Behringer. I actually use a Behringer UB802, and you can view that at shop.maccast.com if you want to see the model. And actually, if you buy it through there, I'll get a little credit on Amazon affiliates program. If you need something a little, that one runs about $50 US. If you need something a little bit cheaper, Behringer makes a UB502 mixer, which is a basic mixer, and that runs just $35 US, and then you just add onto that a Griffin iMic, which is a USB input device that then accepts a line-in or a microphone, and that's $39.99. So you can get those two things, and that's one way to get audio in for doing interviews and recording. The other way is there's a new product from DVForge called the Mic Plug, and it is $39.99 US, and what it does is it plugs right into your USB port and then gives you a standard microphone XLR connection and preamp capabilities, and so that will work as well. So those are two ways from Craig that you can do that, Alex. So good luck with that. Let me know how it works out if you hear this. Okay, that's the show, almost. I'm going to tell you guys about a little secret thing at the end of this MacCast. I have a review of Sony's new PSP. I picked up the new Sony PlayStation Portable, and I'm just absolutely loving it. What happened tonight was I was supposed to go to a board meeting for my user group, and I actually got stuck in traffic, so I quickly pulled out the iRiver and my kind of mobile podcasting kit, and while in the car, I recorded some things, and part of that was this little PSP review. So I'm going to put that after the music at the end of the show, so if you want to listen to that, go ahead. Otherwise, if you're not really interested in the Sony PlayStation Portable, you can just skip it, so that's why I'm putting it at the end. The audio quality is a lot different than what you're used to. It's, you know, my simple lavalier mic, and it picks up a lot of sound, so... you know, let me know what you think on the sound quality, if you think it's okay. It's what I plan to use when I go to the Apple Store for the Tiger release party, hopefully, and I'll do some interviews from there, and I think it'll work out pretty well. The sound quality is okay. It's not obviously as good as the in-studio sound quality. But anyway, that's the show for tonight. As always, you can visit the website, maccast.com, for the full show notes. You can also leave comments there if you want to give feedback on any of the show. If you wanted to send me email feedback, send it to maccast@gmail.com. And then if you want to just call the call-in hotline, if you don't want to have to set up anything to do audio recording and you want to give audio feedback, call 206-222-2788. That's 20-MACCAST-8. All right, the music tonight is going to be from Neto. The track is called Selah. It's a listener. His name's Martin, and it's sort of a Brazilian dance, rock, punk, reggae-type music. Their lead singer moved to Mexico City, so they're no longer together, but they play every once in a while. There's not a website for them, so there's no CD to buy, so just enjoy the music, and I will see you all next time.
Distance was erased from your memory, and now the
All right, Selah by Netto. All right, those of you who still stuck around and are still with me, here's my little mini review of the Sony PlayStation Portable. Enjoy, and it just kind of ends abruptly, so don't be concerned when the kind of track just stops. All right, see ya.
All right, I thought about something else to talk about. The Sony PSP. I know it's not really necessarily a Mac thing, but I'm finding some really great uses for it with my Macintosh. I picked up a Sony PlayStation Portable, which is Sony's new portable gaming device, for anybody who doesn't know. It has a USB 2 port on it, so you can hook it up to your Macintosh or your PC, and there are all kinds of applications for it that you can get to sync up your photos, your music, and also movies that are on your Macintosh. The one thing I want to say right up front about the Sony PlayStation Portable that I am just truly impressed with is the size and the quality of the LCD screen that's built into it. It is really amazing. Now, they've had some quality control issues. It's been out on the internet that some of the systems are showing up with dead pixels or little screen anomalies, so you're kind of at your own risk when you purchase it, whether you may or may not have those, and still up in the air how Sony is going to be handling those. A lot of places are taking them back. I personally know mine came from the local Walmart, and some friends also bought them, and they had issues with their screen, and Walmart actually just took them back, gave them an exchange, and they were able to get good ones. I lucked out the first time, and my screen was flawless, and flawless is a really good way to put it, because it is just amazing. It is bright, it is sharp, it is very large. The screen resolution is 480 by 272, that's the native resolution. It's in a 16 by 9 format. The system came with Spider-Man 2, the one that I picked up, so they have movies available for it that you're going to have to buy. The one downside is the media that it uses. It uses Sony's, it's called a UMD, Universal Mini Disc. Basically, it looks like a small DVD or a small CD. If you've ever seen the small size 2 or 3 inch DVDs or CDs, that's kind of what it looks like. It comes like that, but it's in a little plastic case. And anyway, so you can get movies in that format, and then the games also come on that format. But watch Spider-Man, a little bit of Spider-Man 2, and the video quality is just, it's phenomenal. And the screen just is amazing. You really have to see one to believe it. The main reason I was really interested in it was I'd been considering for a while an iPod Photo. I currently have a 10 gigabyte second generation iPod, and I've been looking very seriously at the iPod Photo for having a portable way to display my photos when I'm out on the road and want to show people some photos from my iPhoto library. I thought it'd be really nice to have an iPod Photo, but the price has kind of been a little too high for me, and you know, I have my 10 gig iPod, which works great. I listen to all my podcasts on it, and I absolutely love it. I think it's truly the greatest device for playing music and audio that you can buy. So I really wanted something to do that, and then, you know, possibly movies. So I was looking at the PlayStation Portable because it's $249 US, so that's a really great price. The cheapest iPod Photo, I believe, is the 30 gig now, and it's $349, so a full $100 more. And, the iPod Photo just does photos and music. It doesn't do games, it doesn't do video. And the PlayStation Portable also has built-in wireless, so it has a wireless connection for playing games over the internet. Let this truck go by. So I was very interested in it, and so I went ahead and picked one up, and I have not been disappointed. Trying out a couple pieces of software for the Mac. One is called PSPWare, and the other one is called iPSP. I'm testing them both out. They both basically do the same thing. They hook up with your iTunes library, your iPhoto library, and then also have a little converter in them to convert any videos that you may download from the web or unencrypted videos, convert them into a format that the PlayStation Portable can recognize. Now, in terms of getting information on the PlayStation Portable, your only option is to use a Sony Memory Stick Duo. The system comes with a 32 megabyte card, And Sony memory sticks are actually very expensive in terms of removable media. They work just like flash media, like smart disks or compact flash, but it's a Sony proprietary format. And I believe like a 1 gigabyte memory stick will run you about $160-$180 US, which is very, very expensive. So I only have the 32 megabyte card, which will store, you know, quite a few number of photos, not too much music when you think about it, you know, probably 10, maybe 12 tracks if you really compress it down. So you know what formats the PSP supports? It supports JPEG for photos. It supports Sony A-Track, which is a proprietary format for audio, and also just straight MP3 files. There's no AAC support, obviously. And then for video, it's Sony, not a proprietary format, it's 3GP, I believe, is the format. It's MPEG-4, but it's a special version of MPEG-4. I think it's the same version that you would use on mobile devices. So you definitely have to have a program to convert any video. I took a little iPod fan commercial and converted it, and it looks really great on the PSP. So the two programs that I'm using, iPSP and PSPWare, basically both work the same. They have a little user interface. For videos, what you have to do is add the videos to the software and then click a little conversion button, and then it converts it to the Sony format. And then once you have those converted, you can select which ones you want to sync to the PSP. And then the way iTunes and Photos work, both are the same on both pieces of software. Basically, it goes out and it finds your iTunes library, it finds your iPhoto library, but then what you have to do is you have to pick a playlist to sync, or you can pick multiple playlists, or you can sync your whole library. Now, with just 32 megabytes of storage, I obviously can't sync my entire photo library or my iTunes library. So what I did was I went into each one of those programs, set up a playlist in iTunes called PSP Music, and a photo album in iPhoto called PSP Photos, and then just dropped in the few photos and the few iTunes musics that I wanted to sync up to the PSP, and then selected those in the application. So then what you do is you select the playlist, you select the photo, and then you select any videos you want to sync up, and you plug in the PSP through your USB 2.0 port, and then you hit sync, and what each software does is transfer that right onto the Sony PSP. Then you can unhook it and take it with you. So you have your music on the go, you have your photos on the go, and you have any converted QuickTime videos on the go. And they all just look truly amazing. It's really nice for photos because the large screen, you can see a lot of detail. It has zooming features, you can even rotate. You can pan around photos. It is just a really nice device. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I would recommend anybody who's considering one getting it. I haven't even tried really games on it, but the games look gorgeous as well. So that's kind of my little mini review of the Sony PlayStation Portable. I'm really enjoying it. I'll keep updating you when I find out more uses on the Macintosh. But it works great.